Well, good evening and hello everyone. I'm Alvin King, host of He Said, He Said, He Said, a look at the world from a seasoned Black man's perspective. It is Friday, April the 12th. Welcome to our live show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully, all of you have done what you needed to do to prepare for Monday, which is tax day. And if you haven't, you got a lot of work to do this weekend. And it's supposed to be really, really beautiful here. So hopefully you won't be running around too much to getting that taken care of. And keep in mind, your urgency is not someone's emergency. So those folks that are doing your taxes, they're not sitting there waiting for you to come in there. So please get your taxes done. I'm doing this for you guys. Again, welcome to the show. There are a lot of things going on in April, you know. First of all, let me say this right now to everybody. Our co-host, Bobby, will not be on the show tonight. He had an emergency, and it came right like 30 minutes before we aired. So we're going to miss him tonight, but I want to let you all know. But thank you all for joining us tonight. And if you know him, I'm sure he's going to let you know what's going on. But April is very busy. First of all, for all you jazz enthusiasts, it is Jazz Appreciation Month. So there are a lot of places where you can go and get tickets and see some good jazz shows this month. Also, it's Autism Awareness Month this month in April. And it is also Stress Awareness Month in April. And one of our favorite things going on this month, it is National Poetry Month, ladies and gentlemen. In April. So a lot of good things. If you're a fan of poetry like I am, it is a good month to be in. Our show tonight, we are doing another Manage Your Health series, and we are talking about trauma. Trauma, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking about trauma. It affects all of us. And we have with us a returning guest, Corey George, traumatologist and mental health consultant. Corey is here with us again tonight, and we're so happy to have him here. Corey called me several weeks ago while he was working out at the gym, because he told me that's where he was. And he was like, Alvin, you know, we need to talk about trauma. And, you know, Corey being the faithful person that he is to this show, I was like, Corey, come on in here. Come on, whenever we want to do it, let's do it, because we need to talk about that. You know, it's important because we need to educate ourselves and open the dialogue about trauma, how to recognize it and how to deal with it, because we all experience it, especially being a Black man, and how trauma shows up in our lives. It affects our relationship. Trust issues, communication challenges, emotional unavailability, intimacy issues is huge, and anger, aggression. We're going to talk about a lot of that, ladies and gentlemen, but this show is really important to us, and we're so glad that Corey is with us tonight. Well, we got a lot to talk about, and you know, I can't do what I do without having my guys here. So if we can get on with the chat, let's do it. Hey, boss.
Hey, Alan King. You only have one guy here tonight.
One guy here tonight. I know.
Do it.
Swing it. Do it. Okay. We have to do it. Oh, my God. This is crazy. Yeah, Bobby called, and, you know, he couldn't do it. My brother was having a moment today. Hey, Rodney. Thank you for joining us tonight. Hey, Michelle. How you doing? Thank you for being here. Gonna miss him. And he was so apologetic. He was like, oh my God, Alvin. He really wanted to be here tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So we're gonna do him proud. We're gonna hold it down, and we're gonna get to this show. But how's your week been, Vosh?
It has been a week.
Yeah?
It's been a week. But it's been a good one. It's actually been quite a good one. So how about you?
My week has been good. I can't say that it has been as earth-shattering as previous weeks, but I'm just so looking forward to getting out in my yard and planting. I'm ready for my front yard to stop looking like Beirut. I am so ready to, you know, put flowers and stuff outside. So this weekend is going to be a lot of that. I'm dedicating this weekend to that. It's supposed to be very beautiful here. How you doing, Beth? And so I'm going to do that. But yeah, that's it. So, you know, there is a lot, you know, in the news that I want to talk to you guys about. So it's always so hard to, like, you know, find something. But today, I want to talk about, I know you know her, Oki Lee Simmons, Russell uh-huh. Simmons' daughter. Mm-hmm. She's been in the news because she's dating a 65-year-old gentleman by the name of Vittorio Asaf. He's a restaurateur. And, you know, everybody's all up in arms because of pictures that have, you know, have hit the social media by way of Page Six with Oki Simmons, you know, kissing Vittorio. And both of them, I think they're in St. Bart's. And she tweeted that, you know, she's sad that they're leaving, but she's very happy right now. Again, let me reiterate, she's 21 years old. And a lot of people are going off about her dating this older man. I haven't seen any tweet about them talking about his race or anything like that. Just the fact that he's an older man, 40 years plus her senior. And so I personally, she's the daughter of Russell Simmons and Kimora Lee Simmons. And so everybody was, you know, up in arms about what is Russell going to say about it. Seen a tweet by him and said, hey, if my daughter comes to me, you know, asking me questions, I'm going to do my fatherly duty and give her advice. And so I don't have a problem with what I'm seeing. Do you? Why is this a problem for everybody else?
A couple of things. One, I think their relationship, Russell's and Ayako's relationship, is a little strained. So I'm not sure that they're going to be having conversations about this. Mm-hmm. He looks a little older than 65. Mm. We, as seasoned Black men, mm-hmm. who are about that age, I look at him and I'm like, that's 65 in internet ages, in internet years. He looks like he's in his 70s. To me, mm-hmm. the 40-year mm-hmm. difference, it's significant, you know, 15, 20, I understand, 40, that's a lot. But she mm-hmm. has grown, mm-hmm. and she seems like she's having a good time.
Yeah, and being in a couple of months, I'm going to be 65, and, you know, I'm still talking about how my inner child is running rampant, and, you know, should something come up, it's not, but should something come my way that's younger and, you know, that's younger than I am, I don't see the problem with it. I don't see the problem with it. And the double standards. If a younger man is dating an older woman, it's not so much of an issue.
I think people would have an issue. People were going to talk no matter what, which is why it doesn't matter what other people think, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Life is too short to be worried about what other people think, as long as you are happy. And he's rich. So, like, like, what else? Like, you know, have a good time.
Bing, bing, bing. And I'm not advocating that money's everything. Right, Rodney? She's 21. If they make each other happy, so be it. Get it. I'm totally there. But I just don't think, you know, that it's as much of an issue that people are trying to make it. And probably the people who are making the issue don't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Ooh, or their own business. Because if they did, they would not be so concerned about someone else.
No, so concerned. Thank you, Aral. That's right. Black don't crack unless you don't put your concealer on in the at night or your face cream on when you go to bed at night. Okay.
Which I think he is telling you clearly you are doing, because he's telling you that you look fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, that is, you know, I'm cool with it. But I do have a question though that I want to ask you about that also, Vash. What age would be out of your age range for dating someone if you were dating?
15 years has been the oldest. But as I get older, 15 years becomes way more significant. So it's a tough question for me to answer right now. But historically, I've dated people, guys who were around 13 to 15 years older than I was. It's odd for me to date someone who is around my age. But at this point, as I've gotten older, all that has sort of crumbled away. And I just kind of look at people for who they are.
Okay. Well, other than the first person, but the first guy that I dated, which was my first partner, when I was 17 and he was 27. And so everybody else has been within a 5-year younger range, if you will, 5 years younger than I am. And because I don't look my age, I am younger guys are attracted to me, which age is not an issue for me, but that's just what I get. I'd like to think it's more about my youthful spirit as opposed to how I look. And so that's me. And so, yeah, I just go in. So I'm going to say 5 years, you know, 5 years either way is fine for me. 5 years either way.
But you wouldn't go too much higher or lower?
Not at 65. Because most men who are my age, they forgot who their inner child was. And
yeah, there's something about dating someone who's, I guess, a little bit younger, who's involved in things that sort of keeps you in tune with things. So I understand why he's doing it, and I understand why she's doing it, because people her age are probably not nearly as exciting or able to do the things that she wants to do.
Or rich. And Sharon said 8 to 10 years older or younger. Okay. Rodney E said, when I was in my mid to late 30s, I dated a 21-year-old. It was fun. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And Aral Health said, as a 59-year-old man, I'm sorry, I would limit myself to no more than 6 years younger or older. I'm with Aral. Okay. Got it.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, well, thank you all for weighing in on. Hey, Monica, thank you for weighing in on that. Okay.
Yes, indeed. Well, at 53, Dawn Staley has become a 5-time NCAA championship coach. And being from Philadelphia, I could not be more happy and proud. In just a couple mile radius, we have a Academy Award winner, as well as an NCAA championship coach. And I'm
proud of her. I'm sorry, boss. Go ahead.
Yeah, go for it. No, we can just
Proud of her. I'm just so proud of her that I just get all giddy because, you know, I'm proud of her. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, she's a national treasure. Okay, first of all, she is an American Basketball Hall of Fame player. She's the head coach of the reigning champion South Carolina Gamecocks women's team. And like I said, she's a 5-time NCAA championship coach. She won 3 Olympic gold medals with Team USA as a player. And later, she was a head coach of another U.S. gold medal winning team. So she has so much more to offer the world of sports. And Arling, do you know that she is getting paid? So basically at 53, she's going to be able to date an 18-year-old. Because she's
yes.
She earned $680,000 in bonuses after the South Carolina team captured their championship. There was all kinds of tiers and incentives for her. Like each time she won, all those things got added up to her $3.1 million basic annual compensation from the school. I say she earned every single penny and she deserves more. I hope endorsements come her way because, honey, North Philly loves you. Can't wait for you to come back. Can't wait for there to be a parade. Oh, and Philadelphia is talking about giving her a bronze statue. Rocky got one. She deserves one because she's real.
She sure. And I second that. And I also want to mention something that I've heard, that this team, her team, won all 38 games or consecutive. They won all of them. Her team last year, they all graduated and left. So this was a brand new team, first time playing with her and starting team. And they won all of their games and won the championship. So kudos to her and her coaching. Yeah.
Do you know that she trained her team with male players?
I did see that. Yes, I did.
Which, you know, chimes in with some other things that she has said after she won. But she sees the value of really pushing her team, and it's in her comp plan. Every game that she won, she got a bonus. Do you know how you make a salesperson fly?
How's that?
You put it in the comp plan. They're like, girl, every time you win, we're going to give you this much money. She made those girls play. She made those girls play.
Well, congratulations, Dawn. Congratulations. Congratulations. Thank you for that, Vosh, because you got me all giddy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We are so proud. Mm-hmm. Well, another thing that we are proud of is the way that we are celebrating National Poetry Month. In doing so, what we're doing is we are allowing each one of our hosts and co-hosts to read a poem so that we can celebrate National Poetry Month. Last week, I read a poem. If you have not seen it, please go anywhere that you can find He Said, He Said, He Said live and find that clip. But tonight, our very own host and show creator, Alvin King, is going to read a poem to help us celebrate National Poetry Month. Alvin King, please take it away.
Thank you all. Thank you. First of all, let me go ahead and set the mood. You know, Vosh got me all set up last week, and he set the mood, and he brought his light. So I'm gonna bring the mood. My poem tonight was inspired by our special guest last week, Jerome Braggs. He was here. He has written a book, Only Feed Me Life. And I told you all to go out and get the book because his work is phenomenal. And one of the poems in the book, as I've said, spoke to me clearly. So please indulge me as I read this to you. All right? My poem tonight is called If I Can Laugh Today. If I can laugh today, I must. If I can dance today, I must. If I can write today, I must. If I can hear my best friend's voice, I must. If I can drink hot ginger tea and eat blueberries and soak in a hot bath with jazz softly playing on the surround sound speakers, I must. I will. I must. For who knows if there will be a tomorrow? My health is on borrowed diminishing time, they say. So today, I must know joy. Thank you all.
Hey, yes.
That I'm was a poet so and awesome. Didn't know it. Okay.
Beautiful. Well, now you do. Yes.
Thank you for indulging me in that, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Vosh, for setting me up for such a moment. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. It is April is National Poetry Month. Please read a poem. Thank you. Thank you, Cody. Thank you, Cody. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. Well, we, like I said, we got a great show for you tonight. And Cody said, where did that come from? Cody, yes. The book is called Only Feed Me Life. And we had, please go to our He Said, He Said live YouTube page and see our show from last week. We had Jerome Braggs on last week. Please check it out. Great interview. But tonight we are talking about trauma, and we have a show lined up for you guys that we want to get on with. So if we can go ahead and get our special guest in here, Vosh, I'm ready to do it.
Me too. I can't wait. There's going to be a lot of information.
A lot of information for you guys. And just one second. You know what? I am sitting here. Okay. I'm ready for our special guest. I'm ready. I wasn't ready. Hey, Derwin, how you doing? Corey George is a nationally recognized mental health and trauma expert, award-winning television personality, author, and multimedia producer whose work has been featured on Fox, CBS, NBC, and Huffington Post Live, as well as being a featured interventionalist on A&E original series Digital Addiction. Corey has committed his life to the ministry of helping hurt people to live bigger than their baggage, and has risen above his own traumatic childhood experiences that included childhood rape and molestation, bullying, emotional and physical abuse, and the feeling of abandonment to becoming a purpose-driven practitioner of healing whose means of research, information sharing, and advocating for the increased mental health equity for marginalized communities. As a certified clinical trauma specialist focusing on individual, family, sex trafficking, and prenatal trauma, Corey is able to disseminate evidence and fact-based education and consultation to communities that are often the most affected. George is also the recipient of the 2023 U.S. Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award for volunteerism. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Corey George to our stage tonight.
Hey, beautiful people.
Corey George!
Okay, and before you started, I forgot to add that I'm a poet. So if there's time, I have a poem from the book I wrote that it's a little long, but I think it'll hit home. So thank you. Hi, everybody. Hi, friends. I call you guys friends.
Well, I tell you what, you might have to make a special trip back because we're going to be doing poetry all month. So, look, if you got like 5 minutes next week, sneak up in here. Just come on in here and we will let you do that poem. How about that?
But can I start? Because, you know, I did call you and you reminded me I was at the gym because I forgot. Because sometimes I have these moments and they just happen and I literally do forget them. And when you said the gym, I can tell you now the foundation of why I called you. It wasn't because I had a thought. I shared with you that I had lost my brother in February.
That's true.
And when I went home to Louisiana, that's not where he was, but I went home because I just needed it. I hadn't been back there since my mom died 8 years ago. So it was a cathartic trip. But I also found out the day I got there, my sister told me my youngest brother had just been sentenced to 40 years of hard labor in Angola.
Oh, wow.
Which is the roughest prison in the country. So not only was I grieving the brother figure that passed, I was now grieving the loss of my youngest brother, who I probably will never see again. Mm-hmm. So when I called you, I literally had to stop myself from crying in the gym. So when I called you, I was calling out of love for us, because every pain I had suffered is preventable. Every pain that I just suffered in the last, it was like 5 weeks between. Mm-hmm. My passing, my other brother who was killed via gun violence 12 years ago, it was all preventable. And a lot of it does have to do with what we're going to talk about today. So this show is inspired out of love that was birthed while in pain. So I wanted to give you the full premise of why I felt that this was important.
Well, your call was received and I really appreciate it. So I dropped everything and said, let's do it. So thank you. Again, welcome back to the show, Corey. I want to, you know, bring our viewers in because, again, we are talking about trauma. And I like to talk about the basics sometimes. And, you know, although there are various types of traumas, our focus tonight is going to be on intergenerational trauma, which is also historical trauma and cultural trauma. So, Corey, what are some inobvious ways that the effects of trauma may show up, you know, in our everyday lives?
You know, I do want to clarify because I believe in the state of the world that we have now, it is not any race, any culture in this country, at least me, or just around the world, that has not been even vicariously affected by other people's trauma now. You know, because it's televised, you know, because it's reposted, because we have friends who repost it thinking they're helping, they're not journalists, so there's no purpose for you to repurpose pain. So I want to tell viewers, if you are recycling it, ask yourself, what is the benefit? I think the people that I'm showing it to probably will see it at home, will see it on their own phones, on their own apps. What am I adding to this? You're adding absolutely nothing. You're actually part of the problem. And I'll call anybody out to help save somebody else's life. I'll do that. So that's why you've never seen me forward anything unless there's a context where I was trying to share something that's specific that they would not know. But I, you know, I even tell my kids, be mindful of what you're watching. And we keep watching the same things because we think at some point there's going to be a post that needs our attention. But nothing needs your attention more than you. Nothing. Not even my children needs more attention than I do for myself. So, the question was, you know, how do we live in everyday life? That's it. Part of that is, because things happen so often in the world, now, you know, the fear of missing out is a real thing, because now, now the anxiety wants us to keep informed. You know, because at first the anxiety makes us run away from certain things, right? But also anxiety makes us run to it, because if I'm anxious about, you know, and if I'm hypervigilant, so we don't realize that hypervigilance is not just a physical thing that you get startled or your head is on a swivel. Your head is on a swivel on your devices, because you don't want to miss out on anything because you feel you need to know everything. So the anxiety is pushing us towards more trauma now. So this is what people don't get until they're consulted, saying, so what are your habits on your devices? How often are you watching the news? How long are you watching CNN? Because if you're watching it more than an hour, those news cycles tend to repeat. So you're watching the plane crash into the World Towers 50 times only because you're still glued and thinking something's going to change. Mm-hmm. But now for some people, you are the cause of your own psychosis. So this is how it shows up. And that's one of the actual major ways that we can catch ourselves is, what am I ingesting that I don't realize is hurting me?
So, okay. So tell our viewers, mm-hmm. based on what you just said, mm-hmm. and why is it so important that we understand the basic concepts and consequences of historic and cultural trauma?
Well, so just to be clear, cultural trauma stems from historical trauma, which are just events in history that can be deemed as traumatic. Now, who it affects, that's who experiences the cultural trauma. So like right now, overseas, if anything is happening over there, that's for that culture, that is their trauma. Slavery for us, that's ours, right? That's our cultural trauma, but it is also a collective trauma. So although we didn't experience it, everyone who was part of that slave trade and the offspring that came from that, it is actually their trauma. So we're just people that are also affected because of the transmission of it. So the cultural trauma has already happened, mm-hmm. but the effects have been happening still for hundreds of years to us.
Mm. Okay.
Well, Corey, you kind of start defining things. So if it's okay, before we dive too far, much further into the conversation, what is the difference between intergenerational trauma and historical trauma?
Well, historical trauma, again, is just the fact that something happened that was traumatic in history. That's okay. So because it happened, now the next question is, who did it affect and how? That's when we get into cultural and then, because then it's cultural and then it becomes the word you just said. So there is a daisy chain. There's no cultural trauma without having an event in history, which is the historical trauma. So there is a level to it, because they're not on the same plane. One happens because the next one happens, and then we have the consequences throughout our life cycles.
Is that where the intergenerational trauma component comes in?
Absolutely. And the intergenerational trauma can also be mistaken as curses, which is not, because some of the traumas that we have inflicted are because our ancestors only had limited means of coping, which may not have been the best for them, but they didn't have many other options. So there's a grace in it. So there's a grace in there saying, some of this happened because they had no choice, because they were in survival mode. And now we have to also then try and convince ourselves as a culture that we don't have to carry that burden of thinking we're always in survival mode, because then we are still enacting the same traumas because we believe we have limited resources. And I can talk about how that shows up in the context of how nurture says, if dad doesn't talk about these issues and if mom doesn't talk about these issues, the child may believe that we don't talk about them, therefore we don't have a resource to deal with that particular issue. So just because I can't talk about it doesn't mean it's not resources. I just don't know how. I just don't know how to go and have the help-seeking behaviors that'll give me the resources. But my child sees me having no action, which can then make them believe that no action should be taken. So now it's not that they don't believe they don't have any resources. They just believe for that consequence, and so whatever that is, we just don't take action. So you see how it can be in interrelated way of defining things by conditioning.
Most definitely. I just want to make sure that I still understand, because mm-hmm. I want to find out more about intergenerational yes. trauma. So historical yeah. trauma is just anything that has happened, yes. happened in the past, could mm-hmm. be to you, to anyone else.
Yes.
Cultural trauma follows it from a way of dealing with a particular group of people.
Absolutely.
And if I heard you correctly, intergenerational trauma means that a trauma that has happened in the past to a family or a group of people culturally just continues to get passed down yeah. and not discussed or healed.
It could be not discussed or healed. It could be the coping mechanism. So for example, okay. people who beat their children just as a first response, that's a survival response, but that's not adequate. And it's not saying I'm against spanking. It just says, when do you arrive to that as an answer? If that's the first coping skill you have, and some parents actually beat because they're frustrated, not because there's actually a reason to. So if you have mismanagement of your own emotions as an adult, you don't know, you can't actually realize that you need the timeout and not the child, because the child is taking your direction, because the child is learning how to manage their feelings through you. So now at 18, you wonder why your son has anger management issues. Well, mom and dad, he never saw you manage yours. How in the hell, and yes, I get real deep, how in the hell do you expect him to show up any different than what you've nurtured him to be? Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, the opposite of that could be, because he did not see it and because he knows that it's not good, he then actually course corrects, because we make choices of what we normalize. Either I like my dad doing that, and not say I like, but it's acceptable, so then I'll probably do it because I found it acceptable. That can go through, but that can look like drug use, that can look like cheating on your partners. That could look like intimate partner violence. That could look like fighting as a means of making sure you declare your manhood, you know, because you normalized that because you saw that so much, and so now you're conditioned. But back in the day, great-grandfather probably only had two options when he was hurt in his heart. He had to go drink or do whatever, because he wouldn't go see a therapist. Why would he go see a white therapist about oppression? So I understand why granddad would not have those options. But Alvin, we can go on our medical health website and find a plethora of therapists, a plethora of resources. So the stories are not the same, but we've been conditioned that it could look the same, and it's really not, if that makes it just a little clearer.
I mean, it kind of does. I mean, you've explained a couple of different ways that intergenerational trauma can show up. Mm-hmm. It's basically mimicking behavior, or having that behavior morph in other ways of masking yes. and not discussing it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the discussion that Vosh was having prior to just preparing, Bobby Vosh and I were having preparing for this, you know, nature versus nurture just kept coming up. And you mentioned that. How does nature versus nurture factor into intergenerational trauma? I think you kind of touched on it, yeah. but I didn't walk away knowing.
Nature's biology. So because I know we plan on talking about the whole concept of how trauma that is so repeated and not answered, because trauma is a question. If it's not answered, how we can intervene and change your gene expressions. That's nature. That's how it can show up in nature.
Okay.
Nature is biology. That's all that is.
Okay.
But nature is also environmental. So it's biology and it's the environment. So if you're in a neighborhood that is riddled with violence, that's going to have a big hampering or a big effect on how you see the world, because your neighborhood is your first influence of the world. So then you may walk into a different neighborhood feeling like you're threatened all the time, but you're actually not. So your sense of safety has changed. Nurture means, how does the system around you and also supports you copes with the environment? That's really what it is. How does your system cope with the environment and the stressors? And how does that influence you? So you have nurture and nature. And so with the right mix, there are so many ways it shows up. So that's why it is so individual, that just because you're Black, you don't do certain things. It's almost like saying, you know, just because you're Black, you like fried chicken. Well, that's not true, you know? But just because I'm Black doesn't mean I have to do that, because sometimes that's how we actually keep it going. Well, I'm Black, so I got, no, you don't. Who told you that?
Right.
I challenge all that all the time, and it takes a while, but people are like, no, I, well, so one of the goals is to restore power of choice. Because when you think you only have one or two options, that's your sense of decrease of agency, which affects your choices, right? So if you don't think you have any other options, that means that your agency has decreased. I don't feel that anything or much that I do has an effect on me overall. That's what agency is. I feel that my voice has an effect. So you determine your agency by how you feel about how your actions and your voice and your advocacy for yourself affects you. When you lose that sense, you become quiet. You may not talk about issues. You may be dismissive or avoid it, but the feelings have not left. So when you avoid it and then it piles up, and then when it hits the point with the right mix of a situation, you blow up. You either implode or you explode. There's only two options.
Interesting. Okay, so we've talked about intergenerational. I just want to make sure, because the intergenerational and historical trauma, and then the cultural trauma. I mean, I feel we did intergenerational and historical. I now want to talk about cultural, because it seems in this time we're all experiencing a cultural trauma that is creating more trauma culturally. You know, so again, will you be clear about cultural trauma and
talk? So first, let's think about what culture is. We simply think we're part of one culture, but yes, because we share certain norms, values, and, you know, and ideas and traditions and beliefs based on this collective thing being Black. But when there's a school shooting happening almost every other week, doesn't that affect the whole culture of the country though? So now you belong to the overall culture of the country. But guess what? If you have kids like me, I'm also part of a parenthood culture that my anxieties may be different than you waking up every day. But guess what? I also parent special needs children. I'm also a gay Black man. So you see how many identities and cultures can intersect. And when you have so many, anytime any one of those cultures are offended in any way, they could affect you. So you're not only affected just because you're sitting here as a gay Black man. Absolutely not. And it's being conscious of that, understanding that because I have different identities, I can accept the fact that I'm going to be affected by many different things in the world. So now that should encourage the self-care. That should encourage the things that we'll talk about how to try and protect yourself in the best way possible. Because you now understand I'm not just Black. I'm not just male. I'm also a human. So now I'm tied to other tragedies that happen in other countries. So now I'm part of the world community, which means that we've always been complex humans. We just have to be understanding that being complex now, it can be a hazard towards our mental health now.
Well, because it seems like it's almost impossible to disconnect from all of these different levels of trauma.
It's about management. No, it's about management, because when you deny something, there was no way to enact any protective factors. So when you have denial, that instantly stops your whole ability to be protected. There's no way to be denial, to be in denial, and to be self-protective. There's no way.
Okay.
That's powerful right there.
But is denial the same as avoidance?
The same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, but also remember the term self-preservation is very different. I need to reserve the thing that I want to feel right now. So whatever allows me to just keep this feeling, I want to avoid everything else happening, although it's still happening. I'm going to act like nothing's wrong. So that may be a form of survival, but that's not self-protection.
But it's also a form of denial to me. It sounds like to me, it's also, you know, you're in denial of dealing with what you need to deal with in order to protect yourself. So what is the outcome from that?
Well, denial is always that thing of whatever we deny will show up somewhere, you know? And so whatever you avoid talking about will show up in your whole ability to have robust conversations with friends. Why? Because you're ultra sensitive, because you don't want to broach those topics, because you said those are no-go topics. I can't be in my fullness and express myself, nor can I receive the information I need. So It cuts down your whole ability to have a certain quality of life. If you want to boil down to it, and the things that we avoid, especially if they are stressors that are actively stressing us, the things we avoid can kill us from the inside out. So although you avoided it, and then also, what is the means of avoidance? Because drinking can be a sign of avoidance. Because if you want to blunt your feelings, you take a drug, you drink, sex, anything that takes you away for a moment or more, and it's done intentionally, that's avoidance. But sometimes it's in a healthy way, because if something just happened to you and you need a moment so you can have your thoughts together, that's a healthy form of avoidance. Because I want to make sure that before I have this conversation that may get heated, I want to make sure I'm structured. That's a healthy form of avoidance. Or you're waiting until you can deal with the feelings in a healthy way, but you plan to do that. But if the avoidance is, I just don't want to do that. And avoidance is also learned as well in some cases, in terms of nurture. Again, going back to the examples, I ask, people, and I'll ask you guys who are with us live, what are some of the conversations you wish you would have had at home before you were before you started your whole adult journey? I bet everyone has at least one or two questions or topics that if they were to talk about them, they would have had enough information to not make a certain life decision that may have caused them harm, right? That's me. I can raise both of my hands on that one, And those are the conversations that we're avoiding.
That's a good question for our audience, so I hope they answer.
I hope that, yeah. See, you all need to be, we need to see you all in the chat right now. Corey, I backstage, you kind of went into talking about a testimony that you wanted to share with us. And I want to take this moment for a couple of minutes for you to share that. Ladies and gentlemen, he didn't tell us what the testimony was. He just said he had a testimony. And so I want to give you an opportunity to share what you wanted to talk about on our show.
One of the ways I work with clients, this is not things I share with them until I feel like it's a sense of relatability. So they know, hey, I get it. I understand every possible thing that you could ever be thinking. Let me tell you why. But also I know that for our culture, sometimes we need to have proof. So we need to hear someone else talk about it so we can feel comfortable. So many know, because I've shared throughout the years of this journey of this work and this progressive thing that I do. I am a victim of childhood rape. I think I mentioned it here on the show prior before. And it started at 6 years old. It started at 6 years old. It spanned about 6 years, and it wasn't all the time, but it was frequent enough. And ultimately, by the end of it was by four different people, with three being in my family, three males in my family, and one other male family friend. And when I finally came out with it with my family, the first thing they said was, "Well, why didn't you tell us?" And I said, "I knew what happened when my other cousin told you. She was a year below me, and you guys didn't do anything. You actually caught someone in the act. So what would that tell a 6 year old or a 7 year old or a 9 year old? Why would I come to tell you? I'm offended that you don't know why I could not tell you." Now and even then, when that happened, I wasn't on this particular journey in my purpose. So there was information I did not know. I just thought my family was just like, the devil, and I feel like R. Kelly was my cousin. I literally feel like that. But later on, as I did discoveries of my own, because I needed more answers, because I knew it wasn't just me. I knew it wasn't just her. My heart told me there's a bigger story. So as I became inclined in this, I learned some back history. So I'm going to actually walk you through something. So many people, when we talk about the trauma of Black people, the first thing we talk about is slaves, right? The first thing normally we talk about slavery, but we had to come from somewhere. Someone else had to sell us. You see pictures in Africa where they held some of our ancestors before being shipped. We don't think that was traumatic, that you're losing your identity. You're going to be sold as chattel, sometimes with the promise of servitude, and then you'll be free. Well, we know that was a lie. So you being chained up by your own, what message does that send about trust of your own people? That's a trauma. That is a major breach of trust. That is a traumatic experience. Now you've been chained and held in these, you know, these caves. Okay, that's fine. So now you get on the boat. Well, of course, during the journey, so we all know that there was death, there was sickness. Now they're chained. Death, sickness, starvation. So Vash and Alvin, if you're chained up and you're sitting next to a dead body, like, you know, the guy's dead. What do you think that does to you and your expectations about your journey? And does it feel like you're going to actually make it? Oh, guess what? But then the dead body starts to smell. Now you're using the restroom on yourself because you don't have adequate quarters, the food is slim, and you're seeing tons of people dying. Then you're being tortured, and you have to row the boat. By the time we got here, we were already broken. I would not be surprised if 100% of us had PTSD. Mm-hmm. 100. So now you're broken. You've lost your identity. And so then you're auctioned. So you lose your family connections. You know, you like you're a man who was taking care of his family back home. Now you're reduced to nothing because now you are less than a man by the constitutional laws. You're not a human, like you're not a full human. So you see how this is very ugly just by the fact that we came here. Mm-hmm. Now that we're here, we're dealing with all this. And I want to say this. We know that Black women have been raped by slave masters. That's why we have some of us with different, you know, skin types and shades. So we know this. But who were they going to tell? Who was their authority? So now what happens is so the way that you may have to deal with it is just let it happen. That's coping. That's their coping skill. They have no means of positive coping, absolutely none. So I'm saying this as a preface to my testimony because grace is required to understand why mom and dad and grandmother may not have done a certain thing. I had to learn that. So you look at all of these things that we've had to deal with. I believe that we were all in survival mode. And that constant stress in your body, as we talk about, it does affect our bodies now. It does affect our souls now. And it's not because we're Black that we have a high propensity of heart disease. It's because we have trauma that has traveled with us for hundreds of years. And we just happen to be Black experiencing this. If this was other white people who were enslaved, they would be in our shoes. So it's not because we're Black, it's because we were the ones chosen for this experience and we happened to be Black. So if we separate the fact that it's not because of our identity, it's because of what was done to our whole identity. Mm-hmm. I say that because we need to move away from thinking we're just a people who have to keep experiencing trauma. Mm-hmm. So going back to my story. Mm-hmm. So I just happened to ask questions and people shared with me. Yes, there were other cousins in my generation who were molested and raped. We knew about it in the family, but nobody took action. Well, the same cousin that tried to tell and the perpetrator was caught doing an act, she was younger than me. Her mother gave birth to her when her mother was 13. And we all had the belief that her mother had a boyfriend and she was fast. So at least me, and so I've told my cousin, I said, I apologize because I did not know the truth. And I hate that I had that perception, but guess what? That was not the truth. Her mother was raped. Her mother was raped. Mm-hmm. But because we didn't know what to do with the conversation, we are back in Louisiana. Back then, it was still very Black and white. I'm sure there was no Black counselors or anyone who cared about the well-being of her at all. I can understand because I lived there. I was born there. I know it had to be worse than when I was there, and I was in poverty there. So this is how the trauma showed up. I don't believe that my family intended to be the perpetrators because of silence. I believe that they didn't know what to do because no one ever had the conversations. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue with that is the one who my older cousin who had my cousin at 13, I almost wonder why she was always seemingly upset. But I was young, I didn't understand. But what I now realize is she was calling out all the perpetrators and she was being the black sheep. So had I known now what I know, and she's passed since, and she passed young, but that's what we talk about in terms of ACEs, because when you experience traumas for a certain time in childhood and the number of traumas, they could affect the entire way that your well-being goes, the way that your entire well-being goes for the rest of your life, which can include early death. And there have been some early deaths in my family. When I look back at their lives, even my dad, he had a traumatic childhood. Mm-hmm. So the inspiration for my work is my life. So, and I take that and I say that now because, yes, I never told my trauma because I didn't believe that that was a conversation they would have.
Corey, I want to interrupt you just for 1 second because you used the term ACEs. Can you quickly define what ACEs means? Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Adverse childhood experiences.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's 10 questions we ask. It's a screening for children in the face of trauma that says if a child experiences, well, for every ACE that they experience, it's only 10 questions. It increases their probability of experiencing issues in their adult life, which can include mental health issues. It can include physical health issues, but such as diabetes and heart disease. It can also affect your rate of cancer. It can also affect the fact that you may have a stronger chance of being an addict or an alcoholic. So those things matter because however that child copes, but also depending on the type of trauma and the duration, it can change your whole brain development. Because your brain is developing while all these things are happening. So it's biological, but it's also nature and nurture that's also affecting your brain development.
There we go with that again. Well, look, yeah. First of all, I wish that we could have an hour and a half show. We've been talking about it because Corey, there's so much that I want to get into, but I know I don't want to cut you off, but we're going to have to keep moving.
Yes,
go ahead, because please. We want to get you to the end of the show. So, Vosh, I knew you had a question that you wanted to ask Corey.
I did, because you know we're all about healing and people's mental health here. What are some tips that you can provide us when we want to make our emotional wellness a top priority?
The first thing is allow yourself to feel. Allow yourself to feel, because what feelings you've been hiding and avoiding will be uncomfortable until your body says, "I can get used to feeling sadness." Men, it's okay to be sad. It's okay because it's a real emotion. It's okay because I'd rather you be sad and then understand that your anger is from sadness and not from being angry. You know, if you feel hurt by somebody, feel that. And then also learn how to then communicate that. That's the big deal because someone may want to make sure that you're okay. Secondly, do things that give you a pause in the world. Become mindful enough to be in the moment. And allow yourself to ask yourself, what is going on in my world right now? Because we're in a fast-paced world, and sometimes we think, as long as I work or as long as I am distracted, I don't have to deal with it. But all a distraction is a delay. So the big thing is mindfulness. What allows me to sit in this thing and say, what is actually going on? Also, to take a look at the health of our other relationships. Are we allowing our friends to be what they need to be for us? For example, are we mad if someone else does not agree with us? That's a problem because your opinion is not the only one, but a person who may have been hurt for a long time or needs that approval may go overboard and say, if you don't agree with me, then you're not loyal. That's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Also, are you allowing people to be there for you? One of the biggest keys of healing is social support. So Alvin, you know, and so when you had your experience, I reached out and I called, you know, because I want to make sure that Alvin knows that if he needs me, I'm here. Because Alvin may not think to call because Alvin is going through a feeling. But I know as a friend, I need to show up that way because I would like you to show up for me that way. Mm-hmm. And so these are simple things. And also ask yourself, do you have something that you love in life? the last few years, I had gone through a divorce. My kid had gotten sick for a while. The one thing that I had was this: find something you love. And don't be afraid to give yourself a moment to take care of you. Men, have your feet done, because foot health is important and we like feet to be looking neat, right? Mm-hmm. You know, ladies, take your man out to have a manicure with you. Let him be comfortable with you, you know, doing that. Homeboys, frat brothers, take yourselves out to a spa day. Yes, you're talking about all the girls you bagged in the barbershop, but your waistline may be 49 inches only because you're lazy, not because it's a medical issue. Get up and move. Movement is a way to increase the endorphins. That's healing, but it's also putting you in a position to be healthier. So yes, I call things out this way, and you know, it tends to work because I had an unhealthy family as well. So that's why I'm very, very focused on taking moments out to take care of me. So that's how we focus on ourselves. It's being comfortable being the first priority. And the last thing I want to say about that is that's also part of nurture. I was talking to someone the other day. I said that my mom and dad never talked about dreams. They didn't make themselves a priority, but they're dead at 59 and 61. You better believe I'm doing it different.
Come on
now. You better believe I'm doing it different.
Come on now.
Thank you for that.
Well, look, we have 4 minutes left. And Corey, first of all, I want to say thank you. Again, we could talk to you at least for an hour and a half, okay? Okay,
talk for an hour and a half.
but because there is so much, no, I mean, having you here on the show to talk about trauma has said to me that we need to bring you back because there, you know, to me, there's always a part two and a part three. And so I want you to come back because there are some questions and some things that I want to draw people in on that I know you know and we didn't get a chance to get to. So I want to say, thank you, Corey, for coming on for our Manage Your Health series and, you know, talking about trauma the way you have. Our viewers definitely like it. Thank you. Yes, we will do a part two, Cody. We will. And we will have him come back. But look, don't go away, Corey, because we're going to bring you back to close the show. But okay. I want to say thank you to you again, ladies and gentlemen, Corey George. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Love you, guys.
Thank you. Yes. Okay. Manager series part two. We got to do it, Vosh. We got to do it. So
it's almost like we should have like a panel with a couple of different trauma experts because we have it from so many different perspectives. It might be nice to think about it that way. So
I think you just put it out there and the stars will align because mm-hmm. that's what we do. It. He said. We bring the stars on the show. Yes, we do, ladies and gentlemen. Look, we are nearing the end of the show. Got to tell you guys about a couple of things. Next week, we are doing our Let's Get Newsy episode, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, just briefly, yesterday, O.J. Simpson, he died at age 76. And that was dubbed the trial of the century during the time that you know, he went through his murder case from killing his ex-wife and her friend, and he was acquitted. And, you know, that was really huge. I know Vosh lived in L.A. at the time, but me being here in Washington, D.C., it just dominated everything that we have. I mean, it just dominated all the TV during that time. But to see this person who was a football hero then go to being this actor and marketing guru for Hertz to now being on trial for murder was devastating to a lot of Black people. And then to be acquitted, that was their like, oh, our revenge on the LA police. So it was so much going on. So
I think we all felt a little vindicated because it seemed that he was being framed and railroaded in, and there was an attempt to try to damage him. And we were able to see some discrepancies in the case. So to have him get acquitted for the murder of a white woman, when we have seen historically so many times where Black men have been found guilty immediately because we have made a white woman feel uncomfortable or we didn't cross the street when a white woman came through, it felt good to us. So I think that's kind of why it was good to us. I hope he finds peace. I do not believe that he committed those murders. I think they were trying to frame him. And I now, like I said, hope his soul has found some peace.
Amen. Amen. Well, rest well, of Presswell O.J. Simpson. Can we bring Corey back to the stage so that we can end the show? Hopefully he's not mute. There he is. There he is. Ladies and gentlemen, we always give you guys the words of the week. And this week, well, lately, all of you, some of you who, the viewers, you all have been sending us quotes for our words of the week that were inspired by the quotes that we gave on the show. So tonight, I thought that let me use a quote that was sent in from one of our viewers, Keith Jackson. And the quote is, eventually, all pieces fall into place. Until then, laugh at confusion, live for the moment, and know that everything happens for a reason. And this was sent in from one of our viewers, Keith Jackson. Thank you so much, Keith, for sending that in. Thank you, Corey, again, for coming on the show. Thank you for the love you send out to me and calling and checking on us. And me, I appreciate you so much, man. And you are our resident guru. Okay, so, you know, thank you. And I hope you'll come back.
Yes,
absolutely.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our show for the week. And we look, please pray for Bobby.
Yes.
Because, you know, he's okay. He's fine. But pray for Bobby because he's going through something right now. Ladies and gentlemen, we look forward to seeing you next week on a new episode of He Said.
He Said.
He Said.
All right. All right.
No, have listen, a good week. I feel it's going both ways. I'm like,
have a good weekend, everybody. Bye, thank you, everybody. Corey.